All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for hour number two of our big two-hour weekend get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And, of course, the star of the show is Carol Marks, and we have a very interesting conversation by Carol Marks coming up to start this hour. But much of this hour is going to be conducted in conversation with and interviews conducted by our senior correspondent Richard Neer. He's going to be talking with Dr. Alejandro Younger, a board-certified doctor in internal medicine, cardiology, in New York City, and the author of a book called Clean and the Clean Program. And he's going to talk about how to keep your innards clean, which is where a lot of the disease that we suffer from comes from, dirty innards. We'll get into that a little bit more academically when Richard speaks to him. Richard will also be talking to Dr. Scott Holtzman, a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. We're going to talk about infidelity. And Richard and I will also be talking about some rock and roll history. An interesting hour ahead. But let's jump right into it now with Carol Marks in conversation with Suzanne Ruff. She's become one of the nation's leading speakers and advocates on organ donation and shares her personal story in her inspirational book, The Reluctant Donor, published by Beavers Pond Press.
Now, Suzanne, you're from a family that's been plagued by kidney disease for generations. Many of your family members have needed organ donations. What was happening in your family history that caused this need? And is there a genetic component to this disease? And are you lucky enough not to have the deadly gene?
Yes, the reason our family is all because of polycystic kidney disease. I always say that it affected my life even before I was born, because I was named after my grandmother, who had polycystic kidney disease in the 1940s, and there was nothing the doctors could do for her, and I was named after her. My mother was her youngest child, youngest of six, and my mother was a teenager when she died, and five of my grandmother's six children inherited the disease. My mother had three children, and I'm the oldest, and I'm the only one of my mother's children that did not inherit this disease.
And this disease does not have a cure. And I was wondering if you could tell us about the fact that one half of the people who have polycystic kidney disease, why is it they end up needing a new kidney?
Well, polycystic kidney disease, poly means many, and multiple cysts of varying sizes grow over both kidneys, eventually causing them to fail. They're not malignant cysts. They're cysts, fluid-filled cysts, and they have uncontrolled cell proliferation, and it causes both kidneys to fail. The only treatment is dialysis or a transplant.
With PKD, people usually go on dialysis. And is there a misconception out there that once a patient is on dialysis, that their kidney problems are solved? What's the truth about this?
And I think, Carol, that's an excellent point. A lot of people think, oh, well, you have dialysis. But dialysis is a wonderful life-saving gift that when I wrote in my book, many of the people I loved most didn't have the option to go on dialysis. And I don't want someone diagnosed today with kidney disease to forget how far we've come just in my lifetime. But dialysis is a difficult life. Our mother was on dialysis for 10 years, and my sister was on dialysis, and she always said she would like the nurses to try eating the diet that a dialysis patient must follow. And I don't think any of us understand how wonderful our kidneys are. They clean out almost 52 gallons of blood per day in each of us, and they remove toxins. Well, when you're on dialysis, it's a machine that's doing what your kidneys do. It cleans your blood for you. But it is a very difficult life on dialysis.
Now, let's fast forward to the heart of the story. When you learned your sister Joanne had polycystic kidney disease, how old was she at the time she learned that she had it, and how sick was she?
My sister collapsed with polycystic kidney disease just after our mother died. My sister was 50 years old at the time. I sometimes think that's why a lot of people don't know about PKD, is because it usually strikes midlife. We have another sister who was affected in her, like her kidneys began to fail in her 30s. I also think it's because there's no famous movie star. But my mother had just died, and my sister collapsed and was in critical condition and was told that she had polycystic kidney disease. And there's a caveat to this story because our parents had us tested when we were teenagers and told us that none of us had polycystic kidney disease. They lied to us, and that was their way of protecting us, I think. But it was, so it was a very traumatic time with our mother just dying and my sister being diagnosed.
When your sister was diagnosed and told that she needed a kidney transplant, how long was the waiting list to get a kidney from a cadaver, someone who had passed away?
Well, she needed, she was on immediately put on dialysis, and because they said she was so critically ill. And I knew that the wait at that time in 2004 was, there were about 90,000 people on the waiting list. There's over 117,000 today. And she faced a 5 to 6 year wait for a transplant from a cadaver. And today you face a 6 to 8 year wait. So I knew what kind of life my sister was gonna face because of having seen and watched our mother battle polycystic kidney disease. So I called her in the hospital and blurted right out to her that I'd give her one of my kidneys.
When you told her that you were going to give her one of the kidneys, that was really extraordinary because at the time you did not have a good relationship with her. Why was that, and what did you learn was behind the way she was acting that you didn't like?
You're right. At my mother's funeral a few months earlier, I had told my husband I was never going to speak to my sister Joanne again because I wasn't getting along with her. And the reason I wasn't getting along with her is because I thought she had changed. She had become moody and grumpy, and I wasn't any fun to be around, and she was always crabby and snapping at people. And it was a real revelation to me, because I realized that she wasn't mean and grumpy. She was ill. And I have a sentence in my book that illness brings you to your knees. And I realized when she collapsed that how much I really did love her. I really had to look deeply within myself to see that I had been the one judgmental. So I really had a awakening when I realized that she had changed because she was ill and she wasn't facing, she was in denial. She'll admit it. She's actually a great spokesperson now for not doing and not handling PKD the way she did.
You agreed to donate the kidney to your sister, but you also had overwhelming doubts and really very strong fears. What were your strong fears all about?
Oh, I immediately regretted that I offered to give her one of my kidneys. And to her credit, she told me first that I needed to be sure I did not have PKD, which, in fact, they thoroughly tested me for. But she also knew that I am like the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz. I lack courage. And I think I associate, I've been known to faint at the sight of blood, and I don't think anybody likes to be in the hospital. I just associated hospitals with death because of my family's past history with PKD. And I just was very squeamish. I think a lot of people are. And I really actually wanted to change my mind and to tell her, I a couple days felt like I'm not going to do this. I'm going to change my mind. And then I knew another moment would come and I would realize what she faced. But to my sister's credit, she always told me every day that I could change my mind.
Now, what was the biggest thing that enabled you to work through these fears?
Definitely my faith. And we're a big Irish Catholic family from the south side of Chicago. And yet we're a family with a great sense of humor. And even though we squabble, as all families do, I don't care what anybody says, families squabble and argue and don't get along some days, but there's an underlying love that we have for each other that we work hard at, but I think it's the example that our mother set and the other aunts and uncles in our family. Their belief in God and in faith and in being able to turn to God for the strength to get through it is what got me through everything I did for my sister. I journal, I pray, I swim, and I have an incredible husband.
Now, organs for transplants are so desperately needed. What do you think can be done to increase the supply of them?
Well, I like talking about it. Even though disease and death is a dreadful thing to talk about, I volunteer with the organ procurement organizations, and you're more likely to know someone who needs a transplant than to know someone who's from a donor family. And so I tell our story so that people could see that in the event of a sudden or unexpected death, to be an organ donor, oh, and I always stress that I don't think people should run out and be a living donor. I think that's an extremely personal decision. But to be an organ donor in the event of a sudden or an unexpected death is the greatest thing you could do for your fellow man.
Suzanne Ruff in conversation with Carol Marks. And if you want more information, go to the website, thereluctantdonor.com. Richard Neer joins us in conversation with Dr. Alejandro Younger next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And it's time now to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation now with Dr. Alejandro Younger. He's a board-certified physician in internal medicine. He's a cardiologist. He's trained and is now practicing in New York City. He's a New York Times bestselling author of the book called Clean and creator of the world-famous Clean program. He's going to talk about the new book, Clean Gut, the breakthrough plan for eliminating the root cause of disease and revolutionizing your health, published by Harper One.
Now, you talk about toxic matters that can clog up your gut, and it brings to mind the whole idea of the colon cleanse, which we've heard about before. But your program is different than that, is it not?
Yeah, listen, I'm not talking about cleansing and detoxification and clogging of anything. I'm talking about something more basic, which is the way that our gut is damaged by living in the modern conditions. And I explain in the book how the gut is the root of problems that sometimes are distant and seem unrelated. And I compare the body to a plant. The plant has leaves and fruit and flowers, and when those are not growing well, the gardener doesn't go to the roots, it doesn't go to the leaves. He goes to the roots and the soil. And that's what we do in the body. When we go to the root and the soil, which is the gut and the food that we eat, then problems start correcting that may manifest in the leaves and and the fruit and the flowers, like the skin, the hair, and your organs.
Now you go further and suggest that most chronic diseases like cancer, heart disease, even lack of libido can be traced to the gut, right?
Yeah, most people today are familiar with the fact that before the chronic diseases of the modern world, the ones you mentioned and many, many others, there is inflammation. Before the chronic diseases, there is inflammation. But before inflammation, there is gut dysfunction, because inflammation begins, for most people, in the gut. See, around the intestines, we have 80% of our immune system. And this is the immune system that gets irritated the most frequently by the conditions in which we're living and the foods that we're eating, right? So inflammation, which everybody knows of, and everybody's trying to fight against, is one of the consequences of gut dysfunction. So when you repair the gut, you eliminate inflammation from the root.
So inflammation is a symptom of this problem. Now, what are these toxic triggers that you talk about which cause this?
Inflammation is not a symptom. Inflammation is a defense survival mechanism of the body. It's a perfect survival mechanism, and it's very well needed. Without inflammation, you die. But the problem is that inflammation is turned on systemically, all over the body. Why? Because the biggest part of the body, of the body's immune system, is around the gut.
Well, I guess what I mean by a symptom is you wouldn't have the inflammation if you weren't irritating something, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
You wouldn't be triggering and putting on all these survival mechanisms if you weren't trying to survive something. Exactly.
Now, what are these toxic triggers?
Well, yeah, the way that we live is so unnatural that we have created a toxic condition. It's like a fish that jumps in a dirty fish tank with no oxygen. So we jumped from nature and we jumped into the cities that we created, where we're not exposed to the light anymore. So we are deficient in vitamin D, and we're not exposed to the sun, and we are breathing in and touching all these toxic things, and we are eating all these toxic things. So those are the toxic conditions that we created for ourselves. All the unnatural things that we are doing, all the things that we are doing that actually work against nature's design.
Now, this is a 21-day program. Sketch it out for us, if you will.
Yeah, basically, things in nature take their time. And it takes about 21 days to really start correcting and repairing the gut. Just like it takes 2 weeks to repair a bone that is broken, right? So during those 3 weeks, during those 21 days, you have to eat in a certain way and which mainly means not eat certain things like dairy and gluten and grains and other things. And then you have to take certain supplements to help the body with certain deficiencies that we created. So that's what the program is about.
And is this something that once you do this for 21 days, you repeat it every so often, or is it something that you actually change the way you eat permanently and you adapt to the new regimen?
Well, the thing is this, why do you even go to repair your gut? You go to repair your gut because the gut has been damaged. What is it that has been damaging your gut? The way that you live, mostly the things that you eat. So if you repair your gut and then you go back to what you were doing before, you're obviously going to damage it because you already damaged it with those conditions. So the hope is that people would feel so well that they would be inspired not to go back to what they were doing before. And that happens to a lot of people that do the program.
And you can do it by reinstating these foods one by one and seeing what actual effect they have on you, correct?
Yeah, because once you finish the program, you have like a blank slate. Now your immune system is calm, and now when you reintroduce these things that you may, let's say you miss these things and you think they're so important for you, then you reintroduce these things one at a time. And I explain in detail in the book how to do it, but you watch for the effects that those foods have on you for the first 24 and the next 48 hours, and then you can really understand how those foods affect you.
Dr. Alejandro Younger, in conversation with Richard Neer. His book is titled Clean Gut, The Breakthrough Plan for Eliminating the Root Cause of Disease and Revolutionizing Your Health. It's published by Harper One. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, continuing this hour, which is populated heavily by the skills in broadcasting displayed by Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. And coming up in just a moment, Richard Neer is going to be speaking with Dr. Scott Holtzman. He's a distinguished fellow. I love that. Distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and a former clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Brown University. And he's written a book titled The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity. Now, that's an eyebrow raiser. The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity, published by Johns Hopkins University Press. Richard Neer, you will be presenting the conversation in a few minutes that you already conducted with Dr. Scott Holtzman. Is there a secret? I guess I'm asking you the question that you asked him, but without giving it away. Is there a secret to surviving infidelity?
Well, they do studies on these things, and I'll tell you, Michael, I'm very skeptical, and I tell the doctor this too, about studies asking about infidelity, because people lie about it.
They wag their finger
and they say, I did not have sex with that woman, you know?
I mean, I'm skeptical of all studies. I think focus groups lie. I don't believe people are candid, frank. You know, I don't want to say truthful, because that's you know, has a different connotation, like they're trying to deceive. I just don't know if people are even honest with themselves about how they feel about these things.
A lot of times when you ask somebody, what would you do if?
Right.
We project ourselves, well, if I were him or I were she in that situation, I would do X. And you don't know until you're in that situation, because you can intellectually figure out what you would do, but then your heart gets involved and your emotions get involved and you do something different.
And infidelity is one of the most complex subjects in all of human psychology and all of sociology. Infidelity is a very sticky wicket, as they say.
Well, yeah, and people choose different ways to deal with it. That's what we talked to the doctor about. I mean, you can just say, okay, once and that's it, it's over. You've lied, you've cheated, you've deceived me, you've stabbed me in the back.
You've
or
cheated,
you can say,
yeah, I got it. I'm sorry.
You can take your part of it and say, well, something I did must have caused you to do it. That's the opposite approach.
Yeah, you've cheated, you've lied, you've said that you love me. Sounds like a song.
Yeah, it'd be a good one.
Yeah, actually, this is the subject of most songs that are popular on the charts today. Okay, well, we're going to listen to that, and then Richard's going to come back and join us for some final words looking back at this hour and looking ahead at the week ahead. When A Touch Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again, as promised, by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation now with Dr. Scott Holtzman. He's a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and former clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at Brown University. And he's going to talk to Richard about his new book titled The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity, published by Johns Hopkins University Press.
You're going on, you're extrapolating from a 1994 survey, is that correct?
Well, the studies, that's right, the studies go back to the mid-90s, but they've been replicated over time and continue to show that the longer you've been married, particularly if you're in your 60s now, the greater the chance that you've had an affair at some point during your marriage.
Now, let me ask you this. You say they've been replicated. Are things getting better, do you sense? Things getting worse in terms of the numbers going up or down?
Well, it's funny because, first of all, when you talk about statistics related to infidelity in marriage, there's really nothing that's reliable because the odds are if somebody's going around doing a survey, ringing your doorbell and asking, have you had an affair on your wife? What are you going to tell them? So it is, and it's also interesting that if you do these same surveys by computer, which means that you remove any people involved, the rates of infidelity that people admit to go up sixfold. So we have to keep in mind that all of these studies you have to take with a grain of salt. But what we do believe is happening actually is rates of infidelity are going up in women more than men because more women are going into the workplace and finding more opportunities for affairs.
So you're saying that men might wag their finger and say, I never had sex with that woman, and it would turn out not to be true. Women are doing that more and more now because they're in the workplace. Now, is it, you know, the theory is if you're happy at home, it doesn't matter the temptation, you're going to say no. Is that the case? Or sometimes you can have a happy marriage, things can be going well, and somebody just comes along that's very alluring, and you have a couple of drinks, and the next thing you know, you're in bed?
I think you described it perfectly, except to say that that person that comes along might not even be all that alluring. It's not necessarily an issue of being seduced on a sexual basis. Many people that are happily married end up finding themselves in affairs, and it usually happens because they develop a close friendship or a close intimate connection with somebody who they might or might not have ended up with at some point in life, but it's not necessarily over sex that they're starting to meet and talk. But that those positive feelings start to increase. People begin to feel more connected. And then they start to say to themselves, you know, for some strange reason, I feel like this person understands me better than my spouse. And often from there, it goes into an emotional affair, which then leads to a physical affair.
So it sounds like, though, if you do have a great marriage and you do communicate and you do understand each other, that there's not that much of a chance, or are you still at risk here?
I think you're always at risk. But I do agree that if you have a great marriage and if you're communicating specifically about issues that might be a threat to the marriage. In other words, you know, my wife and I might have a great time. We might enjoy camping together. We might, love to watch the same TV shows and have a great sex life. But we also have to have a conversation about that really interesting woman that I met at work, who invited me to lunch. You know, you have to be available and open to talk about potential risks to the fidelity of your marriage, that you and your spouse can negotiate that and both of you become clear that it's not okay. Because it's when you start keeping secrets that you start paving the way toward infidelity.
Well, when you say it's not okay, let's say that you come home and, hey, I met this great woman at work. She wanted to have lunch. It's strictly business. We have a lot of common interests. You don't mind, do you, honey? And she goes, sure, I understand. Can that, however, be taken as permission in a way, or is it sometimes taken as permission?
Well, the one question would be how, quote unquote, attractive is that person? I mean, if it's not somebody that you would ever have an attraction to, someone in a totally different generation, a totally different body shape, a totally different gender or sex that you're interested in, it wouldn't be that much of an issue. But assuming that it's someone that could be potentially attractive to you, then I think the spouse may be wise to say, don't worry about it, but, you know, when do I get a chance to meet her? She sounds interesting. Invite her over for dinner. Keep that person as part of the family and try not to have this private personal relationship. Now, that's what the spouse might do in terms of what that particular man who has this interesting gal he wants to hang out with. He also has to set certain limits in terms of how much he's open about what goes on in his life.
And I think also time and place is important too. I mean, it's one thing to have lunch with somebody when you both have a limited time and have to get back to the office. And another thing to have dinner when the spouse is out of town and, gee, there's no plans for the rest of the evening. I don't have a dog to feed. It certainly
Absolutely.
Makes it a lot easier.
That's right. So you don't want to put yourself in a situation, you know, you don't want to say to somebody, well, tell you what, you know, I've got a hot tub out back. Let's just hang out there and get in our bathing suits, and we'll just have a nice platonic
glass
chat.
Of wine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you definitely want to make sure that you're in a situation to reduce the risks of having infidelity, including situations that would involve alcohol or drug use. I think it's a mistake to be hanging with a potentially attractive other person and begin to start downing alcohol, because it lowers your inhibitions and often leads to decisions that you ordinarily wouldn't make.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, we're speculating that up to 43% have had an affair. What about recovery from that when it's found out, it's exposed? You know, we've certainly seen politicians and movie stars and athletes and everybody having their sex lives exposed. And we've seen some women just immediately run away, and some women stand by their man, to use an old phrase.
Mm-hmm.
What are the percentages? I don't know if you know the percentages, but what are the likelihood and what are the ways that if you have one affair, you realize it's a mistake of the couple reconciling?
Well, I think people are surprised to find that most couples that have been victims of a single affair, even though they'll tell themselves, if anyone ever had an affair, you know, with my spouse, that would be it, period, end of subject. Most people actually do manage to keep relationships together. Now, there aren't a whole lot of studies that look at that. One goes back into the, I believe it was actually the late 80s, that showed something like 67% of couples stayed together. In my own clinical work, it's about at least 50% of people will continue to stay in the marriage after one partner has had an affair. And it's absolutely possible to recover, and many people use it as a template to go on and improve the quality of their marriage.
What would your advice be if someone isn't caught, has an affair, ends it, realizes that it's the wrong thing to do? Are we in a don't ask, don't tell situation, or do you think honesty is the best policy, that one should admit it and let the chips fall where they may?
That is probably one of the toughest questions that's out there. If somebody has an affair and that is not discovered, and the spouse does not suspect it, do you come home one day and say, look, I have something that I have to get off my chest? It's something I did a few months ago or a few weeks ago or even this past weekend, and I need to tell you about it. Here's my rule of thumb, but I think every case varies individually. If that affair is some indication of something that you, either a character flaw that you have, a behavior that's at risk for happening again, some particular set of circumstances that everybody needs to be aware of and work together to prevent, then I think it's got to come out. But if it's something that may never happen again, that is not reflective of any particular personality disturbance on your part, then you have to ask yourself, what's the gain in telling my partner? Because we're, you know, it may just end up hurting my partner more. But those are very rare circumstances. In most cases, affairs aren't just a once and done thing, because there's a kind of an addictive quality to them, so that people have an affair, and then all they can do is think about that affair mate, and they want to connect with them and send them text messages, and it just steamrolls from there. When it reaches that point, eventually your partner will find out. And I think you do have to have an open, honest discussion about it.
That's Dr. Scott Holtzman in conversation with Richard Neer, and his book is titled The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity, published by Johns Hopkins University Press. Attention, young Rascals fans. That's right. Richard Neer is going to be back in a moment to talk a little bit about pop culture and the group from the 60s that's still doing something very interesting out there here in the teens. Yes, the teens of a new century. All that coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, as we come to the final segment of this hour of our two-hour broadcast. Richard, what's happening out there in the world of popular culture?
Well, I opened up my newspaper today, and I see that the original Rascals, the Young Rascals, are touring. And it looks kind of like the Four Seasons show, you know, Jersey Boys. It kind of looks like it's a little story, it's music, only instead of having actors play the roles, the actual performers are playing the roles.
The Long Island Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Rascals, the Young Rascals, who then became the Rascals, and then they became Felix Cavalier and the Rascals, they're a Long Island band. They're a group from Long Island. Right.
Well, Felix Cavalieri was really a great songwriter, and then he had a solo career. He had a couple of good songs in a solo career. Now, Van Zandt is saying that he thinks the Rascals were every bit as good and as deep as the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Well,
now,
back
I have
up,
to
back
part
up.
Ways with little Steven on that one.
Well, back up. A lot of people may not know who Steven is or Van Zandt. Steven Van Zandt, the guy with the bandana, he was in The Sopranos as one of the guys, but most importantly, his career has been as the guy that's up there on stage with Bruce Springsteen, all the way back to the early days of the E Street Band, and he's kind of a well-known rock and roll musician, and he's also a radio host with a music show on music stations. Am I correct?
Yes, he has Little Steven's Underground Garage, and I think he loves that late '60s music. You know, that's his genre, his oeuvre, if you will, that garage band sound. He doesn't like the polished stuff. He likes things in mono, You know, So it's got that kind of throwback, that dirty recording where it's not clean and pristine like today's digital recordings. He's really into that stuff, but I mean, I can't compare the Rascals to the Beatles and the Stones. I mean, that's the highest honor you could give a rock and roll band, I would think.
Yeah, well, no question, the Beatles are the highest honor. The Beatles are the sterling, you know, the gold sterling, the blue ribbon. That's what that's the standard. I'm sorry, at this point, enough time has gone by for that to be a proven fact. Stones are certainly big and up there, but they're certainly not even the Stones are in the same league as the Beatles, in my opinion. But, you know, music is subjective. And as somebody says, in my opinion, I personally think the Rascals were every bit as good or as innovative as the Stones and the Beatles. Well, that means it's your opinion. It can't be wrong. But if somebody presents themselves as academically trying to point out that the Rascals were more important or more innovative or more influential, well, I agree with you. I wouldn't back that up. You know, the Rascals were interesting in as much as they were, they sort of straddled between the pop top 40 sound before the progressive rock era, before the Sgt. Pepper style took over, and they sort of eased into it a little bit. But they were sort of left by the wayside in terms of being more of a mid-60s pop band.
Well, they were blue-eyed soul. You know, they had that white soul music. And that was the year, of course, when Motown was very, very popular. Hall & Oates picked up on that mantle years later, I think.
Yeah. The when you think of blue-eyed soul, I think the Righteous Brothers are the ones that are most often labeled as that.
Used to watch them on
Shindig? Hullabaloo?
Yeah, Shindig and Hullabaloo were the shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're selling reverse mortgages.
Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers appears on one of those late night Time Life commercials for old songs. And he looks pretty good for an older guy. As a matter of fact, I looked at him and I go, who is that guy? Because he was gray and he was dressed in sort of a leather jacket. I go, who is that guy? And then I figured out, oh my God. It's a 60-something, you know, Bill Medley of the Righteous
Brothers.
And
he was the one with a very deep voice, and Bobby Hatfield was the one that sang Unchained Melody with a very high voice.
They were very cool.
Hey, Richard.
They were great. Thank you so much. Interesting stuff. Richard Muir, our senior correspondent. Beverly Santanella, thank you for your excellent work as our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, a great woman, the host of our program. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.